Hey, this is Kyle Clark. You're listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News and streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com.
Denver's violent crime numbers are moving in the wrong direction, and pinpointing why is hard. Denver just came off one of the safest years in decades. Our Mark Salinger talked to the police chief about what's changing.
Crime has made a lot of Denver headlines recently.
In the last probably 10 days, we've had 6 homicides, I believe. And so we're 50% above where we were this same time last year.
Denver Police Chief Ron Thomas acknowledges the surge, adding some context.
We're still significantly down from where we were in 2024.
Last week, a man walking his dog was randomly shot and killed by a man on probation in the Curtis Park neighborhood.
Completely random, unexplainable events like that one, I think, are difficult to prevent.
On Easter Sunday, 2 people were killed at a North Denver park. And so far this year, Denver police has investigated 18 homicides. At the same time last year, the number was 12. But a violent start to the year still puts the number of homicides so far in 2026 nearly 20% below the 3-year average.
Generally trending in the right direction in terms of crime lowering across the city continuously, but concerned about these most recent incidents.
The number of homicides dropped around 40% year over year.
Well, that wasn't supposed to happen. But luckily, we know a little bit more about that story. So talking more about what's going on there, the chief says that the weather may also play a role. It's been a very mild winter, mild spring as well. Something to do with that might also increase the crime numbers. I also asked him about flock cameras. He told me that the Denver Police Department is having an impact with the lack of flock cameras, and it is impacting their investigations. Though, Kyle, we don't know exactly how much at this time. And he says he wouldn't go so far to say that these crimes are because of the lack of flock cameras.
Right. Numbers are one thing. Causality is a second thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. We thought that we were actually going to have an episode of Next tonight, and instead, this is a game show called How Well Do You Know Your Story? And you just advanced to the second round.
Just barely.
Yeah.
Just barely.
That's some pretty good work right there. All right, Mark Salinger, thank you. Progressives on Aurora City Council have blocked an agreement between Aurora Police and the ICE detention facility in town. APD said it was designed to eliminate confusion. The council majority, though, thought that it was a backdoor way for police to work with ICE. APD Chief Todd Chamberlain said the memo would have given his officers the authority to respond to criminal incidents inside the facility with guardrails so that officers wouldn't be assisting with federal immigration enforcement. You might remember there was the time that there was a power outage and it allowed 2 dudes to just walk out of the detention facility last year. The feds blamed APD, said they dragged their feet and declined to assist with the search. But at a city council meeting last night, critics argued the department should not have any formal agreement with the immigration facility and that the bigger concern was conditions for the detainees inside.
And I know we've gotten a lot of advice over the years, not just from our current city attorney, that there's nothing we can do. But I think we have to keep having the conversation about what we can do to regulate and to challenge those conditions.
As far as us partnering or dealing with ICE or with the GEO, again, that's going to be in any facility. It doesn't matter if they escape from a federal penitentiary. It doesn't matter if they escape from Arapahoe. We would be aware of it. We would know about it. If we felt that it was going to impact Aurora, we would support trying to apprehend that individual before other people are victimized.
City Council voted 6-4 against the agreement. Mayor Mike Kaufman disagreed with Council's decision. He said today that having that deal in place would have helped APD better protect Aurora. Strong winds and dry conditions mean the wildfire risk is high this week, especially for the western slope in the San Luis Valley. Xcel says it's going to do one of those preemptive power shutoffs tomorrow around noon in Alamos County, Canales County, Castilla County, and Rio Grande County. And the shutoffs could last a while. Conditions are supposed to be ugly through most of the day tomorrow. Xcel says they will start restoring power when conditions have cleared. So that could be hours or that could be days. 9 News meteorologist Chris Bianchi is along now. And I feel like, right, we are at the front end of what could be a long season for this kind of thing. And now we're in this setup where Xcel is not going to be shy about preemptively cutting off power.
No, Kyle, and tomorrow is one of those prime days where we are a little extra concerned about that potential for fire danger. And notice here as well, you can kind of just see it in the map. Notice about 70, 75% of the state of Colorado is underneath a fire weather warning for tomorrow. Northeast Plains, including Denver, we're underneath one. That's for winds up to 45 miles an hour, 60 mile an hour gusts, southeastern part of the state. So those winds start to rev up tomorrow morning. You might notice those winds, southern Colorado, western Colorado, but also this. Thursday morning, we'll see that potential for some of those stronger winds in and closer to the Denver metro area. So Boulder, Larimer County foothills, you'll have the worst of it late tomorrow night and early on Thursday morning. So just a couple reminders, sign up for those emergency alerts, have a go kit ready to go, and avoid anything with a spark outdoors. I suppose the second part should be fairly obvious, but just as a reminder, nothing with a spark outdoors. We're in between high and low pressure. And then we take a look at that 7-day forecast. There is some meaningful relief on the way. That'll be coming up for later this week. And I'll have details on that in just a few minutes.
All right. Thank you, Chris. Colorado struggling with what to do with criminal defendants who are deemed mentally incompetent, so they can't stand trial. There's bipartisan agreement at the Capitol that the state needs to improve that aspect of the mental health system. Our Angeline McCall reports on a reform bill that's seen about 40 changes along the way.
For people in and out of the Capitol, one bill feels deeply personal.
Through tears, she stated that her deepest regret was that my family would be walking away not with a sense of justice and closure, but instead an immeasurable sense of prolonged suffering.
Families testified earlier this month that they waited on justice that never came because defendants were deemed mentally incompetent, then charges dismissed and released. Those stories at the intersection of mental health providers with their own concerns.
This bill allows courts to override that judgment. That creates a fundamental misalignment. The clinician remains responsible for the patient's care, but may no longer have the authority to determine when continued involuntary treatment is clinically appropriate.
Senate Bill 149 would change the system. Right now, defendants may just be released with charges dropped. And in several high-profile cases, those same defendants have reoffended after release.
Primary goal here was to say if somebody is dangerous and is committing high-level crimes, and they're found that they're not going to be able to be restored to competency in their foreseeable future, that we find them a placement where they can be kept safe.
Democratic State Senator Judy Amabile is one of the bill's sponsors, saying this change is overdue. If passed, defendants could be civilly committed.
You cannot participate in your own defense, and we want you to go to a facility that is designed to treat people who have intellectual and developmental disabilities to care for them.
Among the top obstacles lawmakers are trying to take on is the cost for these resources, the amount of beds available, and reimbursements for mental health providers amounting to 40 amendment requests.
There are still some parts in there where we are amending or changing some of the civil commitment rules, and that will impact more than just the people who this bill is meant to impact.
We mentioned this comes after several high-profile cases. One such case is when Solomon Galligan was released after an attempted child abduction despite being on the sex registry. The bill will now go to Senate Appropriations tomorrow. Kyle?
So for folks who are not familiar, at the Capitol, right, lobbyists and other groups, interest groups will come in and they'll say either, you know, we support this bill, we oppose this bill, or they'll take an amend position, which means we could be okay with this if you make some changes, but we might oppose it if you don't make changes. And there's still groups that are on that middle ground about this.
Yeah, in fact, I was on the Secretary of State's site today. There were 4 or 5 pages of organizations, and most all of them were in amend positions. So despite already seeing 40 amendment requests on this specific bill, there's still more, right, requests. And when I called organizations today, they said that they actually didn't want to talk on this yet because they want to see if their amendments are fulfilled and if those concessions are made. So we'll see what happens as this continues to go through.
All right. Angeline McCall, who spun the wheel just like Mark Salinger, but did not have to recite her story from memory off the top of her head. Thank you, Angeline. Colorado's Republican Party wants a judge to block unaffiliated voters from participating in June's GOP primary. This is a long-running feud inside the Colorado Republican Party, with one faction saying that blocking unaffiliateds will allow them to select more pure MAGA candidates, and another group saying that is a recipe for getting your tail kicked in a blue state. So the party's currently without an elected chair also because of the civil war within the Republican Party. It's just been one single-term chair after another as party members argue and fight with each other. They sue each other, and they basically do everything except for win elections and chip away at Democratic control of Colorado. Right now, both the Republican and Democratic primaries are open for affiliated voters, or for unaffiliated voters. Governor Jared Polis has signed off on a new bill sealing court records for kids who legally change their names. It is the latest effort by Democrats in the state to protect transgender youth. The bill, backed by progressives at the state capitol, will require courts to seal the legal records of name changes for kids and teenagers unless they have a prior felony. It also exempts kids of legal requirements to provide public notice of a name change. The bill would cover name changes for a variety of reasons, including adoption, but the bill sponsors have explicitly said that this is meant to protect trans youth from being publicly outed and targeted. The bill originally included a controversial provision that would have required judges to consider whether a parent accepts their transgender child when determining custody agreements. That part of the bill was removed due to opposition from Governor Polis. So no secret, Colorado's had a bad snow year. But what is it? Is it just a bad year, or is it climate change? Let's talk about it. Water is flowing into a reservoir in northern Colorado despite the teeny tiny little uranium problem they have there.
On this section of the creek, it tends to be a lot of shopping carts, hangers, traffic cones.
Yeah, that sounds like stuff that you don't want in Cherry Creek. Time for a community cleanup next. Colorado's disastrous snowpack of this past winter got talked about on Capitol Hill today as senators questioned Energy Secretary Chris Wright about climate change. Democratic Senator John Hickenlooper and Wright go way back from Wright's time as an oil and gas exec in Colorado. Hick asked Secretary Wright, who was a climate change skeptic, for his take on this historically warm, dry winter. Secretary Wright said, "It's just a weird year. He's seen worse."
At Fremont Pass, up where the Climax mine is, they do multiple snowpack readings, and they've been doing that for 100 years. And over that 100 years, the average has been 240 inches. This year, it's 60 inches. This is right about the middle of March. I'm not sure if there are other explanations that could explain something like that than global climate change.
But when you talk about anomalous years, even just during our lifetime, Breckenridge, the ski area in Colorado in the 1981-82 season, was open for 4 days. It opened on February 5th, and it closed on February 9th. We had a bad ski year in Colorado, but nowhere near as bad as that winter. So there's always going to be anomalies in weather. Climate is the long-term and average trend. And in Colorado, regarding snowpack, it is pretty much flat over the last 90 years.
I want to bring in meteorologist Chris Bianchi on this because you know more about this than I do. When you hear the way that they both describe what we just lived through, what of it lands with you and what doesn't land?
So I'll say that what I would have preferred Senator Hickenlooper to talk about would have been from a big perspective, that temperatures in Colorado have gradually warmed, right? This is a map of Colorado temperatures in the winter over the last 100 plus years, and that they've gradually warmed. Rather than talking about one individual place and one individual winter, talk about it from the big picture. Now, what I heard from Secretary Wright, that was not good at all. Let's just leave it at that. When you're talking about ski days in 1 year in one place, that is not any sort of an anecdote that really has any scientific backing. So when we're talking about climate change, always talk about the big picture. Again, nothing small, individual events, very hard to link that to a warming climate. We can see that sometimes, but on a general basis, again, be careful with individual events, best viewed through 30-plus year windows. And tomorrow we do have a fire weather warning for the Eastern Plains and that 7-day forecast weather impact alert for tomorrow because of that fire danger. And then those temperatures will cool down, some rain chances this upcoming weekend into the early part of next week.
Appreciate the perspective, Crispy. So northern Colorado, you know, is adding population fast, and they were on track to get a new reservoir and dam last year until workers ran into a little problem. They found uranium leaching into the water. Can't have people glowing, so you got to do something about that. The uranium is still there, but water has now started flowing to the Chimney Hollow Reservoir west of Loveland, started as of today. The water is not for drinking at this point. They're going to study it. Last year, Northern Water found naturally occurring uranium in the rocks used to create the dam for Chimney Hollow Reservoir. The water leaders there say that they don't expect that it's going to contaminate the drinking water beyond safe levels, and they expect that their uranium levels will decrease over time. So they've started filling the reservoir to 2% of its capacity so they can test the uranium levels and make sure that everything is as expected. They're also making sure that the dam is in working order physically to eventually serve 12 cities and municipalities between Broomfield and Greeley.
This is real-world data. That's what we need to make some management decisions on how we're going to handle it. So this uranium issue is something that we believe we can manage, but we've got to really understand the situation a lot better before we can move forward.
The water's not going to be released downstream while the uranium issue is still being studied. Northern Water says they'll be testing the dam's water release capabilities, and they'll do that with fresh water that has not been in contact with the uranium-bearing rocks. No timeline for when this thing will be fully operational. Cherry Creek is looking a little rough in spots lately. Today, volunteers gave it some love. That's next. Cherry Creek is not a landfill. Clearly, some of our neighbors need a refresher on that. Until then, volunteers were out for a cleanup day.
Yes. Trash grabber? Gloves?
I have gloves.
Happy Earth Week! We appreciate you guys coming out. This is awesome. So I'm Sarah. I'm with Protect Our Rivers, and we're a nonprofit organization. We work to make an immediate impact on river health. We're gonna go get started picking up trash. Today we're cleaning up Cherry Creek, and we do a ton of these every year, but Earth Week is a really special time, so we try to get as many people involved as possible.
It's encouraging that there's so many people. There's I thought this would be a little small meetup, and there's 200 people plus here. So that's great.
We scope out a lot of rivers that really need love. And we hit different parts of Cherry Creek, and this is one of the most heavily polluted stretches. On this section of the creek, it tends to be a lot of shopping carts, hangers, traffic cones. Sometimes you find TVs and laptops, and people just throw crap in the river.
Oh, yeah.
We found a pair of, I think, pants. Yeah, some very old pants. A can that was full of I don't know what. It was very heavy, not water.
Oh.
There's a vape out there. Didn't somebody have waders a second ago? Adam, are you getting in the water? Live here, kind of play here, so good when everyone else is out cleaning up, join in and help out.
The goal of these cleanups is to, one, get people to connect with rivers or creeks themselves. Our whole thing is, until you can love something, you're not gonna protect it. Happy Earth Day, woohoo! Protect our rivers, do some good. Have some fun doing it. That's what we're about. Thank you so much for being here.
That was the work of our talented photojournalist, Foster Gaines. Protect Our Rivers estimates that volunteers collected 1,500 pounds of trash. If you want to get in on the Earth Week action, they're hosting a cleanup on Clear Creek in Arvada on Wednesday and another at Sloan's Lake on Friday. We're back with your feedback next. Thank you very much. A text tonight from DJ who says, we love Mark Salinger's news coverage. He is so measured and graceful. Those are two very good words, and they both describe Mark Salinger. A text, if you're unaffiliated, can you vote in both the Republican and Democratic primaries? No, you have to choose one. You don't have to vote in either one, but if you do vote, you can only vote in one. Feedback from Jay on Instagram who says, when are you going to be yanked off TV? I want to plan a celebration, then you can move back to California. Jay, I don't know when I'm going to get yanked off TV. I do know that I've never lived in California. As for your celebration, the idea of your joy coming from somebody else's misfortune, one, is kind of bent, and two, it's out of your control. I want you to celebrate something that is within your control. Start small, a little win, like changing the channel.
Thanks for listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News. Streaming live, same time, on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Next producer is Mallory Harris. Our digital producer is Marilyn Moore. Our visual editor is Jeff Sartell. Our reporters include Marshall Zellinger, Mark Salinger, Angeline McCall, and Evan Kruel. Misty Montano is 9 News' digital director. I'm Kyle Clark. I'll see you next time.